And the last in the series, From Loon Pants to Safety Pins. This week, part three, Up Yours, Britain, takes us to the end of the decade, but we start in 1976 with a warning.
This is Basil Brush here, and I'd like to say to all music lovers, if you've got any cotton wool handy, stuff it in your ears now.
This is a mob wall.
It was a brilliant decade. It was so extreme. Everything about it was extraordinary.
This is the mob wall.
The 70s led, at the end of the day, into the ghastly, greedy 80s, which have to be looked on as one of the worst decades going. But there's no way out of it but that the 70s paved their way.
Good evening. Following my election as leader of the Parliamentary Labour Party, Her Majesty the Queen has invited me to form a government, and I have accepted that invitation. My first engagement as Prime Minister is to give to you, the people of Britain, my thoughts about our country and what we should be doing.
Callaghan was nothing. You couldn't imagine anyone being inspired by James Callaghan. You couldn't imagine James Callaghan having a political philosophy. I don't know what he was, except a kind of pair of glasses, really. But then again, Brecht said, happy the land that needs no heroes.
Tell the people, consult the people, trust the people, and we can win the people to whatever measures are required, even if they're disagreeable.
Yes, we're forecasting 32 centigrade, which is 90 Fahrenheit.
And that means it's going to get hotter and hotter today and all over the weekend.
First in today's PM, an appeal from the Drive Supremo, Mr. Dennis Howe.
At the end of the day, in this crisis situation, it does come down to every single person in their own household to help. Every bucket of water that's saved now will prevent us having to carry water from standpipes and hydrants in the streets later on. That's the only way it can be looked at.
Save a bucket a day for Dennis. Keep industry on the move. It's work and safety first, and last is your thirst, so you'll have to use the bird bath to flush the loo. Drive a dirty car for Dennis. Cherish that filthy chrome. As the layers of dirt get deeper and petrol prices steeper, you'll find it that much easier to leave the car at home.
It was the first song that I really remember sort of being, sexy. I think it caused some outrage at the time, but it was a huge hit and it was perfect for that very hot summer. It went, I love to love you, baby.
If anyone ever says you can't do much on 10p these days, you just tell them to make a cheap rate phone call. If you dial long-distance calls direct on your own phone, you can chat for as long as 3 minutes for less than 10p. And local calls are even cheaper.
There's no soft option. There can be no lasting improvement in your living standards until we can achieve it without going deeper and deeper into debt as a nation.
In them days, we're glad to have the price of a cup of tea.
Aye, a cup of cold tea.
Right. Without milk or sugar.
Or tea.
Aye, in a cracked cup and all. We never had a cup. We used to drink out of a rolled-up newspaper.
Best we could do was to stuck on a piece of damp cloth. But, you know, we were happy in those days, though we were poor.
Because we were poor, my old dad used to say to me, money doesn't buy you happiness, so. He was right.
Right, well.
I think as the decade wore on, you could sense a change in the mood, you know, like there'd been the sort of glittery, glamorous bit in the middle of the 70s, but towards the end, especially where I came from in Manchester, like, you could feel that the dream was starting to go a bit wrong.
Glasgow in particular, as a city, I think, suffered major industrial decline during that period.
And London, I remember at that time, did seem to be really crappy. I mean, the tubes didn't work. Everybody was on strike. Nothing seemed to be being built or being done. Nothing seemed to work. It wasn't surprising that people didn't feel much hope. There were really no ladders of opportunity for people.
Now, I don't go a bundle on schemes. I mean, where there's a scheme, there's usually a schemer, right? But as it happens, this youth training scheme looks okay. There's a year of training, proper training, and practical experience. And what do you know? You get something that's worth more than money. A signed certificate that will give you a real chance of getting a decent job. If you don't get on a youth training scheme, how are you going to get on?
And it was job creation, because I arrived there and they said, who are you? You know, what are you going to do? And on the spot created a job for me, which was terrible. You know, go around these houses with this book and tick off of the numbers until on the same place. You know, it was that kind of job. It took me about 3 months to realise, hey, this doesn't need to be done. But I still think that there are far more opportunities then than there are now.
Due to unfavourable financial conditions, I am unable to cope with this financial situation. It's causing an inflation of frustration.
I can't stand it no longer, the wicked get stronger. I can't stand it no longer, cause the battle is getting hotter. But them have to get a bill. We can have to get a bill, yeah. They must get a bill, yeah. We can have to get a bill.
The only party which says stop immigration, start repatriation, is the National Front. I am standing on a platform of racial discrimination. I believe in discriminating in favour of our own British people. That's what I believe in.
Racism had become more organised by the 70s. So at the same time then, there was the rise of opposition to racism, which was the organisation of certain black groups, which was Rock Against Racism, and various people who joined organisations like the SWP.
And the Anti-Nazi League, and all those, you know, things now which are mocked almost because, you know, they're ideologically sound, but it's not sort of trendy to pay that much attention to them. It was far more poignant then, it was far more clear.
Young people are naturally good-hearted and generous, and I want to appeal to you, all you young people, play your full part in our efforts. It will be your world. Help us to build it.
The country's a bleeding light state, isn't it?
What are you trying to do about it?
Make it worse.
I am an anti-Christ. I am an anarchist. Don't know what I want, but I know how to get it. I want to destroy bastards by design.
It really was all about hatred.
It was completely anti-everything, anti-life, anti-believing in anything, anti-hope for the future, which was basically what all the 60s was about. It was about hope for the future and let's make this world a better place, which wasn't going to work anyway because it was far too idealistic.
And I thought, yeah, this is good. This is good. I want to hear some more of this.
Against society, the small minority of self-chosen lepers against society.
I personally didn't sit down and think, well, yes, I want to become a punk rocker because the world is on a decline. But obviously, were things going wonderfully well and everyone had jobs and there was lots of money around, there wouldn't have to be anyone saying it's a whole load of crap.
Glam was very about looking dead right and perfect and very sort of glitzy and sparkly, and all of a sudden you'd wearing rags to make a point.
punk was a fantastic charge because things had got decadent by about 1974 or 75 and you were sick of it.
Suddenly, you had all the vibrancy and the energy of working class bands. I remember sort of being in a garage and sort of having a drummer, a bass player and a guitarist and having no idea of rhythm and no idea of who should start and, you know, and it literally was, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, heads down and just thrashed like mad.
It really was English in that sort of bulldog sense.
The whole hippie thing had been essentially middle class in that you were being invited to drop out of a society into which the majority of people had not yet had the opportunity to drop in. And suddenly, what had initially seemed to be rather unpleasant and undesirable suddenly looked terrific. Men are on a blind date, helping out an old mate, waiting at the corner, she'd be dressed in black. There was I expecting a really tasty bird. He said she was good looking, my sister Dallas word. When I saw her, that she was a real disgrace. I thought, nice legs, shame about a face.
You know, you went to South Dakota, but you went to the Oxfam shop, or you raided your granddad's wardrobe. You just wore clothes that were, you know, you or what you thought were you.
Ripped clothes and safety pants and rubber. And a friend of mine used to walk around wearing a sort of nappy hanging down.
And you immediately took your trousers in, of course, because players were no longer de rigueur. You had to have green pipes and look like your legs had been throttled.
Nice legs, shame about your face. Nice legs.
I think when you're quite young and you get sort of taken for granted, the only way in which you can be noticed is actually to be threatening.
There was a real buzz to it, there was no doubt about that. The clothes were a big part of it, upsetting people, and this particular shirt that I had, bought from Seditioners in the King's Road, had a picture of Jesus on the crucifix upside down with a big swastika. And that was good, I used to get a lot of remarks, some abuse about that.
The appeal of it was new. And it was shocking, and it was different, and you were different to the others.
Oh, yeah, I mean, we were individuals because we were wearing a uniform. There's no doubt about that. We really were. How seriously you were into punk rock was measured by how completely and strictly you adhered to wearing this uniform, and that's when I got my Mohican haircut.
Well, first of all, I dyed my hair purple.
It started off with a bottle of peroxide.
And so I went to hairdressers with fairly long hair, about sort of shoulder length, and told them to do something interesting.
Peroxide's a funny thing, really, because you can put it on cotton wool or just pour it into your hair, but nothing happens for about 3 days, so I used to put more and more in.
I shaved it down to the original colour on both sides and left this crest of straw colour down the middle.
And I came out 3.5 hours later with it sort of cropped all the way round, dark, with blonde spiky tips, and the hairdresser had carved his initials on the back of my head.
And then all of a sudden I woke up one morning and it was like bright orange, it's like patches. It was not at all what I'd planned.
I had to go to a ridiculous extent. We're using all sorts of pastes and gums and glues and so on to try and get it to stand up.
And I got the tube home that night, and it was this great sense of power because for the first time in my life, people were moving away from me on the tube. And I knew it's because of my hairstyle, and I thought this was really amazing.
Until finally I was suspended from school. Not due to my hair, I don't think, more due to my behaviour. The two sort of went hand in hand, I guess.
I would just do anything to shock people, like French kiss my girlfriend in the high street. I remember once walking around town with my brother holding me on a dog chain.
We just got chased by the police. It was a bit of a running battle, and we got chased into this churchyard, and we were sort of getting our breath back there. There was about, I don't know, 100 of us. And this German punk got on top of a gravestone, and he found this dead mouse from somewhere and started eating this dead mouse.
And there was a club that I went to and did see three South American transvestites wearing tampaxes around their necks. And so you really felt that this is my era.
The Clash concert was brilliant. That was in Glasgow City Halls. The place was electric. There was pogoing, spitting, etc.
No, there's nothing better than going down to the marquee where you were sweating by the time you got through the door, and getting down to the front where it was about 110 degrees, and just pogoing your little heart out. Being in there, being, I suppose it was a sense of being in a crowd and belonging.
I think that should be one of the best things that happened, was somebody pogoed their head through the roof of our house, in the attic, and this person battered their head through, and I covered it up with a giant BT Busby sticker.
There was a lot of phlegm. There was a lot of phlegm left on the stage at the end of the night. That was all part of it. Gobbing and throwing beer was all part of a good night out, really.
Punk rockers are being banned from a growing number of dance halls. Mr. McLaren thinks this is unfair.
Here were kids for the first time in small clubs to take notice of groups that perhaps a year ago were only wallpaper.
And getting into fights?
Not necessarily getting into fights, but generally standing up and enjoying themselves. Sure, bruising each other a bit, but there's nothing wrong in that. They were having a good time.
Only recently at a London gig, a girl fan of the Sex Pistols got so carried away with their frenzied music, she bit her boyfriend's ear off.
Punk was very hard. It was very destructive. The drug of the 70s that we were all doing was speed, and that really does make you violent, and it wears you out, and it makes you feel bad, and it makes you depressed as well. And that tells you something about the kind of tensions that were generated between people.
I mean, when you were, you know, went to a gig or something, there was obviously the, down the front, there'd be a lot of argy-bargy, and punch-ups would go off without a doubt, but normally, it would only be if there was any little, skinhead infiltrators there. They came from a different mould. It was more like gang warfare. They were just out to fight and cause as much trouble as they could.
Union Jacks waving everywhere. Glorious, glorious sight. And now you can see the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh in the coach. Wearing, Dan?
Well, it looks to me a sort of really like salmon pink hair.
And then that night there was a street party, you know, long stressful tables and jelly and bath. My main sort of recollection is being chased around most of the day by a girl in fluffy slippers.
Feeling that everything was heading towards some kind of apocalypse, and I think punk rock was a way of kind of celebrating that, if you like. The punk rock was saying, this system's a rotten, this system's going to end, and we're the ones that are going to take over, and we're the ones that are going to establish some kind of anti-culture. So there really was something evangelical about punk rock.
The Old Testament prophets didn't go out into the highways saying, brothers, I want consensus. They said, this is my faith and my vision. This is what I passionately believe. And they preached it. We have a message. Go out, preach it, practice it, fight for it. And the day will be ours.
Sid Vicious, yeah, he was great. I mean, he was, you know, the epitome of what punk was all about. Pulling horrible face at everyone and breaking his guitar over numerous punks' heads, drinking. Riding down a country road on a motorbike without a crash helmet on. And when the video finished, old Jimmy Savile saying, Now then, kids, you all saw that, but that was very dangerous what Sid Vicious did, and I hope none of you are going to do that at home, because that was under supervised conditions.
But clearly, you know, if you identified yourself as a punk, you had to change to go into that disco. You would not be allowed. You know, it really would be no punks here. You wore certain clothes and certain aftershave, and you had a certain attitude about you that said, hey, you know, I am a disco kid.
Mr. Thatcher, how important to you is music?
It's what I go to when I want to get away from worries and go from the very logical life that I've lived really to a different depth of experience.
Saturday Night Fever inspired me to take up disco dancing lessons.
Wearing your penny round shirt, perhaps, and your John Travolta jacket, smelling of high karate, going down to the disco and going into this very, very rigorous dance routine.
You always think you don't know what to do in a disco, don't you? You always feel a bit stupid. And the brilliant thing about this was that, you know, there was these moves that you could do and you just looked like you were really with it. You did this whole routine and there's this stupid bit where you had to kind of stick your finger to your chest and then stick it up in diagonal up in the air. And you did this about four times and I remember thinking, oh, I'm so cool, you know.
I think it was there for the younger people because when you sort of, I don't know, 11 or 12 years old, you can't be a punk. Your mother won't let you put a safety pin through your nose.
Sid Vicious just went down the wrong road. He took it too far. The way he died was, like, great. I mean, what a hero. Abuse everyone, make loads of money at it, kill your girlfriend, and then kill yourself. I mean, you know, what a guy. What a punk.
If you want to look for parallels in the 1970s, you could say that two of the most similar characters were probably Malcolm McLaren and Margaret Thatcher, because they were both complete revolutionaries in their own way. They both had a degree of cynicism which was probably unhealthy about what they were doing, but also a real sense of belief in what they were doing too. And I think that at the time it seemed that one or other of them was going to succeed, and it was Margaret Thatcher and not Malcolm McLaren.
But there was an all pervasive negative attitude going on during that. That's what I remember. I just remember the greyness of things. Of the bin men strike and just bags and bags and bags of rubbish.
Plastic bags full of rotten food, obviously, the smell is starting to get overpowering. Just how much of a health hazard is all this, do you think?
There are a couple of conditions which are pretty well known to people working with sewage. One's called virus disease, another one is called rat bite fever.
I can remember just before the election of 79 and campaigning for the Labour Party, and not really believing that anybody would vote for someone like Margaret Thatcher. That's how far from reality we had moved. She just seemed a sort of strange contrivance, like a freak.
Hey, here she comes now.
I would just like to remember some words of St. Francis of Assisi, which I think are really just particularly apt at the moment. Where there is discord, may we bring harmony. Where there is error, may we bring truth. Where there is doubt, may we bring faith. And where there is despair, may we bring hope.
Musically, the 70s ended then as well. You had Pink Floyd being the last number one, I remember, of the 70s with that very depressing song, We Don't Need No Education, All in All You're Just Another Brick in the Wall. And where kids in the early 70s had been running out of school going, school's out forever, school's out for summer. It was quite jolly and it wasn't taken seriously, whereas by the end of the 70s, we were all singing, We Don't Need No Education. And it was a totally different meaning.
You did start to get a sense of greed and materialism and wanting to grab things. It, the for me stuff started to happen. Me, I want more. And you then get the 80s.
That's when you realise, actually, that the 60s and their legacy, it was all gone, it was all over. And that was quite shocking.
I suppose that was really when I started to get out of punk rock, when I got home one day from the police station and couldn't find any of my clothes anywhere. And I asked my dad politely if he'd seen anything of my clothes, and he, with a big smile on his face, he said, yes, they're in the bonfire at the end of the garden, I've just burnt the lot.
There really was a youth culture that you could call your own then. And in a way, I think youth culture now is a bit more insipid. Not like the old days. I suppose everyone says that when they reach the 30s.
A message to all drivers on the M6 heading northwards to Brighton. You're going the wrong way, you fools.
Boom, boom.
Which brings us to the end of our voyage through the 1970s, from loon pants to safety pins. The producer was Lizzie Ensign.